Muslim, Sikh, or Arab issue, but a narrative of inclusion and unity. $5 a month contribution to KABU will get you that thank you gift. If you can give $20 a month to KABU, you can get a KABU hoodie. That's a $240 a year contribution. Sounds like a lot, but it's really not when you take it out. $20 a month, and you can budget that in. And that's your budget for solidarity, for community, for your community radio station. Can
and that
you
hoodie
budget
is
that
dope.
In?
Yeah, that hoodie is dope.
I've got one. I sport it all over town, and it is super dope, man.
You're talking about something like $5 a week. You're talking about less than a dollar a day. It costs almost $100 an hour. We're asking you for $1 a day. Will you do that right now and get that dope hoodie? Call us, 877-500-5266. Many hands make light liftings, friends. 877-500-KBOO or online from any wired box on earth, KBOO.FM.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 11:30. And coming up on the Radio Zine, host Kathleen Stevenson speaks with longtime KBOO host Per Fagerang about his new dystopian novel, Jack Maloney's Century. It's coming up, in fact, right now.
Good morning, this is Kathleen Stevenson for the Radio Zine, and I am here with longtime KABU host and commentator, Per Fagerang, who I get to interview about his new novel, Jack Maloney's Century. Jack Maloney's Century is a dystopian novel. The central character, Jack Maloney's life, spans a century that is marked by the end of cheap oil, banks, and mighty war machines. Old nations break apart, and wars are fought by roving bands. Per, thanks for coming in, and thanks for talking about this book. It's great to get a chance to speak with you.
Well, it's kind of interesting being at this end of the table, too.
Right. I want to mention that this is a matching period. Your pledge to KABU during this show will be matched for this short period until noon, and Per is donating signed copies of Jack Maloney's Century to those who pledge at least $60 to get that thank you gift. So two great offers during this half hour. Please give us a call at 877-500-5266. Jack Maloney's Century, a novel. Is this your first novel, Per?
Well, I've written a few other things. In fact, I did one for a master's thesis at San Francisco State. This one's been a long time brewing, you know, and it kind of came together over the years.
How long would you say it was percolating?
Oh, boy. I don't know.
Just kind of something in the background for a really long time.
Well, I sort of had that, you know, I want to write about peak oil and running out of resources. And by the time I actually got to doing it, as I was doing it, the whole situation got a lot more complicated than we thought at first. The original idea of peak oil was that, as the demand outstripped the supply, then the prices go way up and that collapses everything. Well, it's not quite that way, you know. Now we're finding out that the climate change is sort of restricting our use of oil, too. And the low prices have put a lot of oil drillers out of business because fracking is not... It doesn't make any money anymore. You know, it did for the first year or so, but so there's all these different things happening, and it's hard to keep track of everything.
So when you were envisioning the book and then writing the book, you didn't think that there would be this period where oil and gas prices would go way down?
No, I didn't. You know, in fact, there's some controversy about that. Some of the people who follow the oil situation, they still think the prices will go up, and they probably will eventually. But then there's others, like there's this woman Gail Tverberg, who's an insurance actuary who writes about these issues, and she predicted that prices are going to go way down, you know. And what's going to happen is that the drillers, they need a certain price to drill, but the economies can't afford that price, so you get this big gap, and then everything just kind of goes haywire.
This book starts in Ireland. The story starts mm-hmm. in Ireland. Why did you have it start in Ireland?
Well, I don't know. It's just I'm really not sure. You know, I sort of had this idea that the character's name, you know, Jack Maloney, and actually part of it, you know, was just sort of doing shows with Maura Cullen about Radio Free Ireland, you know, and about the situation in Derry and everything. And yeah, you know, the more I got into that, it just kind of seemed to be a story there. And that's where the story actually begins, because, you know, Jack, as he's a late teenager, and he helps some older friends lob a mortar round into this British Army camp. So the IRA decides to get him out of town. So they get him a job on a cruise ship. And about a year later, he's on the cruise ship during the millennial cruise, you know, for the year 2000. And that's where he meets his future wife, Barbara Falco. And so he winds up jumping ship in New York. And he sort of through the IRA network, he finds the Irish bar in the Bronx, and they set him up with a place to live and a, you know, a job helping demolish apartments for renovation and stuff. And then Barbara has problems with her dad, who's a born-again Christian, and she comes into New York, and she begins working, ripping out apartment walls, too. And that's where they are one day, and they look out the window, and they see this airliner flying very low down the Hudson River. Well, that's the one that crashes into the World Trade Center. And so they get married, and they move to Chicago, and they sort of in the renovation, demolishing business there with this sort of church group that fixes up homes for the poor. And that's where he meets Father Pete, who's just back from Guatemala, who is leaving the priesthood because he's inherited this little house out in South Dakota. So the three of them go out to South Dakota.
And what year do you think that is?
Well, let's see. That'd be around the year around the year 2005 or something like that. And so there, and then Father Pete, he takes a few. He goes away for a trip. He comes back a few weeks later. He comes back with his Guatemalan bride. And so there, the four of them, they're out there in South Dakota, and they. That's where they are when this whole peak oil thing hits, and this is farming community. So that's sort of the turning point, I think, where how does agriculture cope with expensive oil or non-existent oil? And so there's a rationing program, and one thing leads to another. But anyway, you know, they raise two sons, and then Pete and his wife, Elena, they have a daughter. And they all go out to Oregon around the year 2025 or so. And that's where they are for the rest of their lives. Of course, Jack lives to be 100 years old. And he dies near 2080, right after the tricentennial in Washington and Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sort of covers this like... So what the rest of the century is going to be like.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
It provided a framework where you could put your vision of what you think is actually going to happen during that time.
Well, so it was a guess, you know. And after I finished that, I'm thinking, you know, maybe I'm a little optimistic here, because they go through a lot of, you know, tragedy and troubles and everything else, but they come out of it. And then I sort of, you know, you could be take a gloomier attitude, where everything is really going to collapse, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's what I know, that's what Mike Rupert did and other people. So,
well, that's funny, because I was speaking earlier this morning with a volunteer about this interview and the fact that your novel is a dystopian novel about the unraveling of the political and economical and environmental world. And we discussed our impression of you, Per, as someone who is not really negative or angry, or you don't come off as super depressed about the world.
Well, I get pretty ticked off sometimes, but Cabu saves me, you know. Cabu keeps me sane. It really does.
And that's the feeling I had when I was reading this book. I didn't have that feeling of, oh, I have to read another page of this book because the world is going to hell in a handbasket. It still had a feeling of optimism in it, somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing to keep in mind is that even a collapse takes a long time. You know, like I said, you know, Rome didn't fall in a day, you know, and There's this writer, John Michael Greer, who calls himself the arch. Well, he's an arch druid in that religion, but he writes about energy issues and history and stuff. In fact, I think I interviewed him once on KABU.
Yeah.
And, you know, he points out that, like, when the Mayan civilization collapsed, it didn't just happen overnight. I think it took 100 years or more, you know. And mm-hmm. so, you know, the same thing, you know, Roman Empire and lots of others, you know, it's sort of...
Right.
It happens over a period of time. So,
and there's a feeling of resourcefulness on the part of the characters in this book. They're finding ways to survive.
Well, it's like a new civilization is growing within the old one. That's sort of the feeling I have. I think in the future is that, you know, the federal government is really kind of useless. Corporations are kind of useless. That whatever happens is going to happen on a local level, you know, in cities and towns and states and stuff like that. And, you know, just simple things like people feeding themselves.
Did you have to do research for this?
Oh, quite a bit, yeah, sure.
What kind of research did you do?
Well, I started doing this constantly anyway. I have, there's a bunch of different kind of websites on the internet that I check. There's a Post Carbon Institute is really good. They have a website called Resilience. They publish articles and things. There used to be a thing called the Oil Drum that did the same. And so you just kind of keep up with people who are writing about oil and energy and stuff. There's a fellow up in on reading books too. Well, like James Kunstler, who's been on this show a few times, and there's a guy named Chris Nelder who writes about energy issues is really good. Then there's a fellow up in Canada, Andrew Nikiforuk, who actually Barbara Bernstein's had him on her show several times, and he wrote a very interesting book called The Energy of Slaves. Which how oil is our new slave, you know. Of course, it's getting old and worn out, you know. And what do we do next? So, there's all sorts of resources out there.
Right. Yeah, that's great. I was going to ask you what authors that you've interviewed, what thinkers and political writers inspired some of the work in this book.
Well, gee whiz. Well, Jim Kunstler, you know, he's written some novels himself, the World Made by Hand series, and they're very interesting. They take place in upstate New York where he lives. And, you know, that's his take on things. And they're very interesting to read. And he's kind of he's an interesting guy to interview, you know. And then there's... Well, like Andrew Nikiforuk wrote a good book. Richard Heinberg's written some good stuff. And so, you know, there's a lot of people writing out there. And I try to follow some of these novels, but there's not too many that I'm aware of.
Uh-huh.
But, so I thought I'd add my version.
Right.
And I sort of think I'm sort of working on a more pessimistic version right now.
Oh, you are? a sequel?
Well, not a sequel to this, just a different characters, different place, maybe not even taking place in Portland, sort of haven't decided that yet. It might be just some sort of all-purpose city.
I'm speaking with Per Fogering about his new book, Jack Maloney's Century, and again, letting you know that this book is available to listeners, to people who will call in this half hour with pledge of support at least the $60 level, and Per has brought a shopping bag full of books that he will autograph and even if possible give a personal message to you if he knows who you are, that you gave your contribution during this half hour. And we do have a matching challenge also, so please give us a call at 877-500-5266. Let's talk about Oregon in this book, in your scenario.
Mm-hmm.
What's distinctive about what Oregon is like in this period?
Well, okay, they arrive in Oregon around the year 2024, so things have slid down quite a bit. One thing is that, the place they move into is called Dignity Village number 27. See, there's a lot of them. This one is out near the airport, and it's sort of an old warehouse that has been converted. People, a group of people live there, and they have their gardens, and they raise ducks and chickens. And some of the men work at this an airport project where they're actually cutting up the runway. And one interesting thing is that this is one of the forces that kind of splits apart the countries. Like they go to a meeting of the local congressman downtown Portland, and the people are kind of ticked off at him because he doesn't get this, you know, travel between Oregon and Washington is not as easy as it is now. You know, I know like Wyden and Merkley, you know, they're going back and forth all the time. Well, that's not going to happen. So this is one of the things, like people on the West Coast become more detached from what's going on the East Coast. And this goes to, as far as California too. There's a sort of a splitting going on down there. And then the fact that, you know, you have agriculture has changed. Now, we've got a big head start on local agriculture. You know, actually, we live in a pretty good place if the drought doesn't catch up with us, and which it is doing in California right now. So one of the big problems in Oregon is what do we do with all these people from California? You know, some of them have occupations that are totally obsolete. And so what do we do with them? You know, well, sort of the corporate answer is to have welfare plantations. You know, big farms, you know, with a lot of people out there in the fields, and they work for their welfare stipends or whatever. Or the other alternative is kind of have more people on the land in a more like a permaculture way. You know, big gardens, small farms. And so there's this kind of a competition between these two ways of growing food. And the plantation way is really kind of doomed, I think. And sort of side by side with the plantation way is prison farms. You know, a tyrannical government might throw more people in prison just to get more people out there working in the prison farms. But I think that is not a sustainable way to feed ourselves.
And it seems that Oregon becomes a bit of a haven for refugees in the book?
Sure. All these people from California, you know, like at least Oregon has water and better soil. You know, California is basically a desert that's been kind of irrigated. It's an irrigated desert. Mm-hmm. Well, that's another book that's very good. It's a classic called The Cadillac Desert by a fellow named Mark Reisman. Now, that was written about, gee whiz, 20 years ago or more, you know, and very prophetic. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Limits to Growth, that was written back in the 70s, and that's been very, you know, very predictive.
Is it a home that Jack and his family move into in Southeast Portland? It's Jack and his family that move.
Yeah, they're able to buy a house in the Brooklyn neighborhood, strange to say.
And sounded like it might be based on someone we know.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, in fact, so that's where they are. And his oldest son, Dan, he marries Pete and Elena's daughter, Maria, and they go to kind of little farm village out near next to Sun River, and which is Sun River has become a kind of a plantation of sorts. But anyway, that's where Dan and Maria are helping this little village, you know, kind of get started, and that's where tragedy happens. And so,
because there are like spy outfits, there are death squads in this world. There are wars between states. Is that right?
Well, they're regions. You know, like California, there's this whole concept of Aztlan, where you know, sort of the Chicano people. You know, they sort of, it's maybe not on purpose, but they sort of, you know, they're making more of their own decisions. And then, of course, you know, the Texas Republic has always wanted to secede. And then the Mormons have their thing going in Utah, spreading into Idaho and everywhere else. So there's all these sort of splitting apart forces, you know. And they, for the most part, they leave each other alone, not always.
What happens with computers in this world?
You know, I've been wondering about that, because I think, you know, if you have a world where electricity is in short supply, or there's not enough to do everything we want to do, so that means you have to give up some things. So maybe we give up the cloud and 3 trillion pictures of kitty cats, you know. But you might still keep an internet or some kind of, I don't know. I mean, I've been trying to puzzle this out, and I've been trying to find information on this, and I haven't been able to locate too much. But it just seems that when you scale down, you wind up giving up some things. And so what part of the internet would you give up? You know, I love writing on the internet. It's very, you know, this is one of the best things about computers, is that it's much easier to write a long story or a novel than it used to be, because you can sketch it out and you can fill in here, you can fill in there, and it's so easy where you weren't able to do that when you had typewriters.
Do you have any desire to write something that's less based on in a novel form and something more based on political theory or some of these theories that you
have? I don't know, not too much, because I mean, a lot of theoreticians around and they do pretty good. I mean, I don't know. I think that we're in for a world, you know, the most important thing in any future society is how it feeds itself. And this has already been said. Francis Moore-Lappe said that 20 years ago. You know? So I don't know. I mean, I haven't thought too much about theorizing.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I don't know. If I can think of a story, I'd rather just tell a story.
Again, I'm speaking with Per Fogering. We're talking about his novel, Jack Maloney's Century, available as a thank you gift during our membership drive. We're coming to the end of our segment. Per, we have a couple minutes left. Mm-hmm. Is there something that you feel is important to say that we haven't talked about?
Well, I might mention Cabo was in this book.
Oh, that's right.
Very briefly, you know. Hey, maybe I could write a story about Cabo in 20 years from now or something like that. But it's first mentioned where Jack's son Pat, when they moved to Portland, and Pat is exploring the city, which is really amazing to him after growing up in South Dakota, in a little farm town. And he wanders into a station, Cabo, that has a brew pub and a bookstore. And so that's where Cabo first is mentioned. Then later on, that's mentioned, it's sort of one of the few media outlets that this one person trusts when he's called before a grand jury and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of different characters that are in this book, just besides Jack and his family. There's one of the characters is Harold the Welder in South Dakota. You know, he's sort of a part Indian guy, and he's a welder, and he's sort of into making things. He builds Jack's family a little wind machine or something like that. And he's very important, you know. And he actually starts his own little, kind of a little village right there in South Dakota, people working for each other, with each other. So he's very important.
Great. Well, there are a lot of issues discussed in this book. When I was reading the book, I just thought, this is Per in your thoughts, the thoughts that I've heard you talk about on the radio. This is your spirit in a novel form. So lots of issues as well as a ongoing story with these characters. So,
well, I tried to keep it moving. I didn't want to theorize too much. I didn't want to have a lot of explanation, you know. You sort of want to let things happen and stick in explanations here and there. But I sort of hate these novels where you have one guy who speaks for the author, mm-hmm. and he's very, very pontifical and explains everything. I don't like to read that, so tried not to.
Great. Per, I want to thank you very much. We're going to connect now with our friends, Justin and Jenka, to talk about the challenge that we have going on during this half hour, the last program in the morning, the fact that you can have your membership doubled or maybe even tripled if you're in the right category. Justin and Jenka, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Kathleen. You know, in the next 7 minutes, a generous KBOO donor has made an offer to match the next $250 in donations that are called in. So you can double the impact of your gift by calling before noon. 877-500-5266 and get a copy of Pear's book, Jack Maloney's Century. $5 a month to KBOO can get you a copy of this book. You can even stop by right now. Pear and Kathleen are sitting here in the studio, and Pear can, you can meet him and he can sign this book for you. So you can stop by at 20 Southeast 8th, and we've got the books right here. It's a beautiful book. It's got a picture of somebody in a rowboat in front of the U.S. Capitol, where it's filled with water in the future of this country the next 80 years. So do come and stop by and see us and drop off your contribution, 20 Southeast 8th, or call
877-500-5266. We have about 6 minutes to get $250 worth of pledges from you in Radioland so that we don't leave any money on the table. So we've got a $500 goal right here, and five of you could start a monthly contribution for $8.25 a month when you call 877-500-KBOO. Maybe eight of you could do $5 a month, and if these are new contributions, then they would be effectively tripled for KBOO, because all new contributors will be matched during this month, and we're now, right now, in a matching period, which means your $100 becomes $300 for KBOO, and you don't have to pay it all at once. $8.25 a month. Really, really, we're talking about pennies, nickels, and dimes. Call right now, 877-500-5266. The Festival of the Last Minute, and now's where we prove that individuals really do make a difference. 877-500-KBOO.
You know, maybe you're a fan of Pear Fagering's show, Fight the Empire, in which he brings on some amazing guests every couple of weeks. And you can get a vision of Pear's vision of the future of this country, where Jack Maloney ends up in 2080 living in what becomes Cascadia in this region. And that could be yours for a $5 a month contribution. That's $60 a year, but only the next 4 minutes. And we need to reach the $250 match, or we're going to have to give this donor back their $250. And say, oh, KBOO listeners weren't able to come up with it. No, we know that you can. If you can maybe be the hero and get that $20 a month contribution and $240, get the KBOO hoodie. If you're that person, then you will help us meet that match. 877-500-5266. Pamela is a new member from Portland.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much, Pamela. And thank you, Charles and Joe, also, who called in. You could be the next one, and please call now. Please call before noon. We want to make this match. 877-500-KBOO.
Who will be the next newest member of the mighty 90.7? You've been listening for years and years and years, and about 10% of you have consistently made that call of support. There are 9 of every 10 in the thousands upon thousands who are listening across this nation who haven't made that call. Maybe you think it doesn't matter. Well, that's not true, because we are as strong as you make us. Maybe you think you don't make a difference. Well, think about it. If nobody called, you know, who would be receiving this signal? How would we keep these lights on? Maybe you thought, oh, I couldn't afford it. But in fact, everyone has a giving level that's right for them. Maybe you thought, oh, nobody would care. Well, we care deeply. That's why for 23 million commercial-free minutes, we have dedicated ourselves to access, training, and programming. We're asking you to become a shareholder, a stakeholder. We're asking you to see the incentive in ensuring public access to public airwaves. 877-500-5266.
You know, I'm thinking about contributing just to get a copy of this book and give it to my parents. I think they'd appreciate it. You know, somebody maybe in your life that doesn't like to be hit over the head by political ideas, but could read a novel that produces a vision of a changing century. That's something a lot of people could go for, maybe. 877-500-KBOO.
Maybe you're doing holiday shopping by selecting certain thank you gifts during this membership drive. Maybe each time you hear something and someone in your family or in your circle, you say, oh, well, maybe I'll up my membership again. You know, they just upped their membership. Maybe I'll get this other thing when I call 877-500-5266. But you're givers by nature, and you know that the real thank you is the quality of the signal. When you're a stakeholder, you know the real thank you is the empowerment that comes from a community rich with diverse voices. You know the real thank you is an institution that withstands the test of time with fierce independence. Call us right now, 877-500-5266.
You know, we've only got a minute and a half left to make this match. I know we can do it. I know that our listeners are supporters. I know that our listeners are you're listening to KBOO. You're smart. You are beautiful.
You're savvy.
You are somebody who is a discerning listener.
You're decided
that this is where you're going to put your ears every day when you listen to KBOO, and this is where you're going to put your investment in your community, because you care about KBOO and you care about yourself, your own political education, your own musical enlightenment.
And not just yourself, though, your families, your neighbors, your community members, even strangers, people you don't even know. Sorry to interrupt you there.
Yeah, support your community and support yourself and your family and friends. 877-500-5266. Now is the time to do it. We need to make this match, and I know we can do it with your support.
Can't you feel that energy? Every time you hear that phone ring, that's another one of your comrades out there saying yes to free speech, saying yes to community radio, saying yes to solidarity. Can't you feel that energy? Every
yes.
time that phone rings, they are beckoning to you, dear listeners. They are beckoning to you, saying, now is the time. Do it right now. 877-500-5266. Jenka and I have been standing on the shoulders of giants this morning. We're so grateful for everyone who has called, and you feel it, listeners. You hear that. Call it right now. Build on that. Feed into it and feed from it. Thank you so much. 877-500-KBOO.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from All Classical Portland. Presenting an Appalachian Christmas with American fiddler Mark O'Connor and friends Tuesday, December 22nd at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. An Appalachian Christmas features Christmas carols infused with bluegrass, folk, Americana on banjos, fiddles, mandolin, and upright bass. A holiday tradition for Portland families. Tickets at allclassical.org.
KBOO would like to thank the restaurants that have donated food for our volunteers today. Isabel Restaurant for providing breakfast located at 330 Northwest 10th Avenue, serving Latin food.